There are lots of other ways in which this is a very different country from the one the Queen inherited from her father in the 1950s. Professor Danny Dorling, who's a social geographer at Oxford and himself a Republican, argues that there are other changes undermining the monarchy's foundations.
One of the most fundamental changes for the United Kingdom is what a high proportion of people live here now who were not born in the United Kingdom. It's never been higher, and it's actually never been going up as fast as it is now. So there are a huge number of people who had their childhood somewhere else, often a place without a monarchy. The most common place is mainland Europe. That's a great difference to who we are. At the same time, a very large number of people from Britain are emigrating, normally in their retirement. So we send out almost as many people as we get in. And these people, because of their age, are likely to be particularly loyal to the monarchy, but they're not in the UK anymore.
Last year, there was a vivid illustration of the way changes in social and political attitudes can build up a head of steam and explode in a way no one had expected. The surge of pro-independence sentiment in Scotland caught Westminster's politicians on the hop. And although the Scottish independence referendum was settled with a no vote, Scottish nationalism has subsequently redrawn the Scottish political landscape completely. For the record, the SNP supported the idea of keeping the monarchy in an independent Scotland during last year's campaign, and there's no sign of that policy changing. Christopher Lee again.
Just supposing it had been a yes and they'd broken away. If the Queen wanted to go to Balmoral, it would have become a state visit. She would have to ask permission to go to Scotland, to her own home.
But would she? Because she would have been Queen of Scotland too?
Well, no, because, for example, she is Queen of Australia for the moment. If she wants to go to Australia, if she had a house in Australia, which is the same as having a Balmoral house in a way, it would have to be a state visit. The Queen going to Scotland is rather a nice thing. You can have a train, you can have all the corgis out in force, you can have jolly good picnics, and it's lovely to do, especially in August. The formal side of it, the constitutional side of it, it would become an official visit because she would be going into an independent state.
Well, it's certainly possible looking forward to imagine a position in which the monarch is no longer head of the Commonwealth in general, no longer specifically King or Queen of Australia, no longer necessarily King or Queen of Scotland.
Even those like David Cannadine, who believe the monarchy will endure, accept it's likely to face a period of radical change.
It's certainly possible to imagine those circumstances perhaps happening. On the other hand, for most of its history, the British, or at least the English monarchy, wasn't head of the Commonwealth, wasn't a King or Queen of Australia, and until the 17th century, really, wasn't King or Queen of a joint Anglo-Scottish crown. So while it might seem as though the demise of the Commonwealth, the demise of Australia as a kingdom, the demise of Scotland as a kingdom might seem mortally damaging to the British monarchy, the fact remains that the English monarchy has been around for 1.5 millennia, it would really be going back to how things had been before.
One part of our constitution has, of course, already changed significantly in recent years, even if many would argue that its reform has got stuck halfway. In 1999, Tony Blair's government ended the automatic right to legislate enjoyed by hereditary peers. The hereditary principle, which had been part of our parliamentary system from time immemorial, was allowed to pass into history with scarcely a whisper of protest. And with it, Republicans argue, went one of the central props of monarchy.
It chips away again at the idea that somebody should be born into a role. The idea that a young member of the royal family should be expected to fulfil this role simply by being born into that family. The other thing to remember is that our hereditary dukes have been running out anyway. There's been an incredible decline in the dukes over the last century and a half. They simply fail to reproduce themselves. So we don't have that many dukes anymore. Well over half than we had at 1900.
You don't sound entirely upset about that.
Oh, I just find it interesting because, odds on, it shouldn't actually have occurred. And I think when various political leaders were offered and refused to take dukedoms, the idea that you couldn't create new ones, it was seen as wrong, is kind of a suggestion of where we are very slowly moving towards, away from the idea that just because you might have been seen to be great, your children, grandchildren and great-grandchildren should have this greatness thrust upon them and be expected to behave very well.